Let me take you back in time. It was 2004. My girlfriend, who is my wife now, but at the time, she took me on a trip with her family to Florida. Daytona Beach, where her parents have a condo. One day we decided to drive to Orlando. And in Orlando, there's this little place, I don't know if you've heard of it, Disney World? Yeah, kind of the most magical place on earth. At that point, I've never, ever been to Disney. And I was not a kid at that time. So, we walk in, and it was magical. The people, the rides, just the energy was magical. It was an experience to be there, to witness that, to be part of it. So what is it about people dressing up in costumes, standing in line for hours, and yet pay tens of thousands of dollars to experience that? Well, our guest on this episode today talks about that, and that is Lee Cockrell, former executive vice president of Disney World Resorts. Lee breaks down what it really is to be and to create a magical experience. I think you'll really enjoy this. And shout out to our guest host, Jerry Durham. And before we get into the episode, let's take a little minute and hear a word from our sponsor, WebPT. We are proud to be sponsored by WebPT, the end-to-end business solution for private practice PTs, OTs, and SLPs, providing everything from documentation and scheduling to RCM service, billing software, and outcome tracking. WebPT's mission is to help rehab therapists achieve greatness in practice, and that starts with education. That's why WebPT is offering a free guide to healthcare payment reform. To download it today, visit webpt.com/pay-for-performance. And now, on to Therapy Insiders.
What's up, Doc?
Hello, welcome back to Therapy Insiders, Dr. Gene Schirachabrad, and I have a special episode for you today. Special because of a special co-host and the guest as well. So if you've been following Therapy Insiders, which I hope you have, and thank you for being a listener, you know that business is often brought up by us. We like talking business, and we like really bringing the business mindset to healthcare and physical therapy specifically. But not just business, good business. Best practice business, stuff that everyone is doing at the fastest growing companies and people that are leading the charge. And the thing about business, which is very similar to the thing about healthcare, is it means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. It's a big universal term that needs to be defined and outlined, and words are important. If you haven't figured that out by now, you need to keep listening to our podcast and look at a lot of other podcasts. You have to be very careful with how you phrase things and how you communicate, because communication is the basis of relationships. You need to have a strong foundation in communication and understanding of people. And understanding people is critical for one element of business, which is leadership. And leadership is very, very decisive in success and failure of companies as well as relationships. And there's a lot on leadership out there, but one person that has not only talked and has taught leadership for years now, he lived leadership. He brought leadership to the forefront of one of the biggest companies in the world, Disney. That's not a little company. That's pretty big. You know, the company with the mouse and all. Yeah, they're kind of a big deal. So our guest today is Lee Cockrell, from Disney, retired now, doing a lot of leadership training. And our special co-host is Jerry Durham, which I'm sure you know from a lot of avenues and programs such as Twitter. So Lee, thanks so much for joining us. I'm really excited to have you on.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you.
All right, let's just get the elephant out of the room, or the mouse out of the room. Disney. How did you get to Disney, and what was that experience like?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I worked for Hilton for 8 years when I started my career, and then I went to Marriott and actually worked in Washington, D.C., and where you are down that area. And worked for Marriott for 17 years, and I got recruited by Disney in 1990 to open Disneyland Paris. And I had a strong food and beverage background, and they wanted me to open all the restaurants and hire the staff and all that. So went home, said to my wife, "You want to go to Disney? We get to go to Paris." She went, "Absolutely." I said, "Are you crazy? What if I get fired over there?" She said, "Don't worry about it. You'll have regrets if we don't go. We get to live in Paris, Lee. We get paid by Disney, and you get to have a great job, and you'll regret it if you don't do it." And I think there is something about that. Don't get to the end of your life and have a lot of regrets because you wouldn't take any risks. So we packed up. We went to Paris, and we lived there 3 years. I opened Disneyland Paris. My son, who had worked for Disney before I did while he was going to college, actually called me one day and told me, "Dad, I got bad news for you. Disney's better than Marriott." And I said, "Why do you say that?" He said, The training's really incredible." And that turned out to be true. And so my son's now been with Disney 25 years. He's the vice president of the Magic Kingdom, even though he told me when he was 14 he'd never do what I do for a living. So I told him 14-year-olds don't know much. So that's how I got to Disney, and it was the best thing that ever happened to me. I stayed with Disney for 16 years, and I retired when I was 62, and I started my own business, which is a lot of fun. I love not having a boss, and it's just fabulous. I get to do a lot of work with all kinds of great companies around the world, and everybody's trying to get customer service, patient care, student care better in colleges, universities, high school, public education. The message I think that I deliver is, there's a way to do it. As in my book, I say it's not magic that makes Disney World work. It's the way we work. And it's anybody can do it. You just got to kind of get the formula straight, and then you got to have the talent around you to get going. And so I loved working at Disney. It was totally different than the hotel business because of the entertainment aspect. It was just, and of course, most of the guests are paying out of their pocket. It's not a expense account business. Yeah. Wow. But, you know, you save up for three. A lot of people save for years and years and years to bring their children to Disney. So we've got to really knock it out of the park.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a life memory. I have so many follow-up questions based on that. This podcast might be 6 hours long. so let's start with Disney. Then I really want to lead up to you owning your own business and how that's been, and your statement about everybody trying to improve the experience, which I think is good in itself, that there's awareness that the experience needs to improve, and we'll definitely touch on that. So let's talk a little bit about Disney, because you started the park, and obviously for it to work properly, not only do system and processes have to be in place, but you have to train people to make sure the systems and processes are in place. When you were building a leadership program, what did you find that is critical for leaders to build other leaders and to grow a culture of leadership where everyone is working for a cause versus for themselves?
Yeah, I mean, people ask me all the time, what's the formula? How does Disney do this? It's so great. It's unbelievable. Why can't I do it in my company? I said, you can. And I say, there's kind of three or four things we do better than everybody else. And if people, hospitals or doctor's offices or anywhere, any business, decides to do them, they can. And the first thing we do is we hire better. We're more careful. We have a bigger, better screening. Even if you want to work at Disney today, you have to go on the internet and answer 136 questions about yourself even before we'll interview you. We want to know who you are, your attitude, discipline. You're going to be to work on time, high energy. Can you stand on your feet and do this work all day and still smile? And so we hire better. And even after you get through that, if you get to go for an interview, you get to watch a film about Disney, and it's very clear we have high expectations. We communicate those expectations to people, and about 25% of the people, after we clarify expectations, decide not to work for us. They walk out, and that's great. That's exactly what we want. We don't want people who are not committed. So we work hard at this, so we really hire well. We hire slow and fire fast. So
I like that.
We get the right people. And that's the biggest mistake most businesses make. You don't take your time. They focus only on the technical aspects of the person. They end up with an attitude problem. They end up with a person who's got excuses. They got all kinds of reasons why they can't be a professional every minute of the day. And that's what we do. We're on stage, we're putting on a show just like a hospital. Everybody's putting on a show, and the people you hire are the actors, and they've got to know their role in the show, and they've got to do it, and they can't be rude, and they can't blow you off, and they can't, especially in healthcare. I can't even think of it. Healthcare and education, those are the two big impacts in life. The teachers, if they don't pay attention, the kids don't get the right education, shame on them. And if hospitals and healthcare, if people don't pay attention, you really ruin people's lives, their health, even can be lose their life. And so people in healthcare ought to be even more on top of this. And then after that, we train better. We just train better. We train you, then we test you to make sure you learn the training, and then we enforce it. I think that's the other thing most companies don't do, most organizations, healthcare included, don't enforce the training. Our managers are not bashful. They spend 80% of the day out with the cast members and the guests out in the operations, and we see somebody doing something wrong, we step over and we fix it, just like you do with your kids. And we don't play around. There's only one way to do things at Disney, and that's the Disney way. We don't want you doing your own way. We tell everybody Disney's the happiest place on earth or else. And so we train better, we test you, and then third, we have a really respectful culture, very professional. Our managers treat everybody. We don't raise our voice to people. We don't intimidate our people. We clarify what their role is. They decide whether they want to do it or not. If they don't, we quietly ask them to leave. And we'll work with them. We'll give them coaching. We'll give them training. We'll give them a couple, two or three chances. But they decide. We even say today, we don't fire you. You fire yourself. If you do your job, we want you there. We don't want to start over again, have to train somebody else. And it takes a long time for them to get to know what they're doing. So I think those are the big things. Hire the right people. Train them really, really well. And then have a culture where people wake up in the morning, want to come to work, not have to come. For just the paycheck. They're excited because they have a strong purpose. And in healthcare, there's a very strong purpose to wake up and know that you're really helping people. I can't think of a better purpose than helping people. And when you know you're helping people and your boss is treating you right and you've had the right training and he's built your self-confidence and self-esteem through training, and you enjoy your work. You're glad to go to work. You're glad to do your job. And so then,
and that comes down to the experience, right? I mean, Disney is the epitome of an experience. It's the sum of its parts. They sell magic and emotion. I remember when I went to Disney for the first time, I was just so excited about seeing everything and being part of this experience. It wasn't because I knew that they were actual cartoon characters. It was because I remembered how I felt when I was a kid when I first saw these characters. And it wasn't this show or that show or seeing Mickey Mouse. It was everything together, and how I felt, that sticks with me. I can't remember any one thing. Like, I remember my wife turning the camera off when I went to meet Mickey Mouse, and all you see is our feet as she puts the camera up, because she thought it was off and she was turning it on. So you see me meeting Mickey Mouse, you see our feet. And as the camera pans up, it turns off. So I still give her a hard time about that. But I remember how I felt. I just remember that excitement, that joy, and I remember the absolute being drained at the end of the day. But through it all, the lines, everything else, that's part of the experience. How can we make that in healthcare? How can we train not only people that work in healthcare, but people that actually need it, the customers? How can we make this experience something that's not dreaded and feared, something that should be look that nobody wants to be hurt, obviously, but that should be some sort of positive engagement?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's for any business, including healthcare, you've got to decide you want to be great. And it's a frame of mind, you know. If you want to be great, you'll do things better. And the CEO's got to start that. Whoever runs the organization's got to be wanting this, and they got to be supporting it, and they got to be funding it, and they got to be committed to it, and they got to communicate it, clarity around their expectations for performance and how we treat the patients, and following procedures and washing your hands, and everything matters. I guess that's the key. At Disney, everything matters. And in healthcare, everything matters, from the tech coming in the room, to the housekeeper cleaning the room, to the cafeteria bringing the meals up to the patient, to everything matters. And sometimes we don't have hospitals. I don't know if they don't have good processes or they don't have clarity around attitude. They don't monitor it, perhaps. But I know a lot of healthcare operations are now doing surveys, and I know Medicare is surveying, and so are other insurance companies, because you get penalized, and you get penalized in any business. Disney gets penalized if we don't do a good job. People don't come back, and that's the key in life. And when you do a great job, referrals are important. I mean, for therapists, I can imagine how many times do we talk to somebody and they say, I just had my rotator cuff and I went through therapy. Boy, the guy was fabulous. Next thing you know, they get three more customers that I've talked to about this. Referral business is everything. And I was talking to a group this morning about that, another group I'm about to speak to. It's all about reputation for referral. You get out of your car in the parking lot and it's clean and the landscaping's great. When you walk in, the security guard is nice to you and still takes care of the security, and people pay attention. And a lot of hospitals are on top of this now. I did some work for Meridian Health up in New Jersey, and it's like going to Disney World to go to the hospital there. I mean, they're incredible. And so it's just a matter, you get what you want. Mr. Marriott told me many years ago, he said, Lee, if you have flies in your restaurant, you like flies. You know, if you have employees working in a hospital that are not being sensitive and showing empathy, and doing what they're supposed to do and following procedures, that's a management problem, because somebody needs to correct that. You get what you want. I tell people, if you have rude children, you must like that, because you can correct that. So you can correct everything, but you got to believe it's possible. And people got to quit believing it's not possible. Oh, this is healthcare. You don't understand. Oh, I understand, because my internist is fabulous. And I got a bunch of doctors that are just fabulous. And then we occasionally go to one which is a mess. And as you remember, bedside manner, big deal. It's a big deal. Don't underestimate how that puts the patient at ease. And you know, they say in business, the most two important things you can have as a leader is discipline and empathy. Those two things. And I think sometimes in healthcare, people forget about the empathy.
The soft skills are important, very much so, and I think they're getting their light of day. People are becoming more aware that it's important not just to deliver a service, but to deliver an experience. An experience has various elements to it, like easing people's fear of the unknown or concerns.
Yeah.
And just talking to them like people instead of a disease or a diagnosis.
Yeah, you got to communicate more. People don't tell you enough. They don't tell you, what am I here for? Why am I getting this CAT scan? What's going on here? What'd you find? Why? 3 days later, they haven't called you back to tell you the results. And you're sitting at home worried about it. And they get too involved in the administration of it and not enough in the empathy and the side where patients want to know, just like you would or I would. And my wife was very sick a few years ago, and she was in the hospital 67 days. She had a failed bowel resection surgery and almost died. She had peritonitis, all kinds of surgeries. I mean, it was unbelievable. And they'd come in the morning, they'd say, we want to do another CAT scan. They'd take her down and do a scan. They never told us why they were doing it. Hmm. So all day I'm sitting there, worried to death. And then at 7 o'clock I say, does anybody have the results of that CAT scan? Oh, yeah, it was fine. I mean, I'm going, what?
Yeah.
I'm having a nervous breakdown up here. Why don't somebody talk to me? Yeah. And it's like every business. People get to where they don't pay attention when they're doing their job.
Yeah, you get into this routine of efficiency versus really figuring out what does that efficiency entail? Not just A, B outcomes, but everything that is part of the what makes people people. It's the little things in between that really make a big difference. And to your point about referrals, I know referrals are big, especially word of mouth. But as healthcare evolves and we get more digital and marketing changes. And especially with physical therapy, because a lot of states don't require a referral anymore. It's direct access. So you can just go and see your physical therapist. Yeah. It's important to not give people buyer's remorse or initial fear, kind of what you're talking about when people walk in. And somebody, I can't remember who told me this, it's referred to as building a bathroom first. So instead of just building a lobby, you want when somebody goes beyond that lobby or into your first office or whatever it is and get to the bathroom, you spend 95% of all your cost up front, but when somebody goes to the bathroom, goes, what is this place? All they'll remember is that dirty bathroom.
Exactly. I mean, it is. And I think that's just, again, saying, don't underestimate that everything matters. Because like when you left Disney, you can't say exactly why it was so magical. Just like you said, it was everything, you know, that's it. If you want to be great, you pay attention to everything.
Absolutely. Jerry, let me ask you this. In terms of you've been a proponent of the patient experience, and instead of just having a kind of a dry service-based healthcare experience, for lack of a better word, what is a good patient experience? How can we take, like Lee was talking about, from Disney, where it's a magical emotional experience, and bring that into healthcare?
You know, I'm gonna default back to Lee on this, because listening to these questions, I think Lee, early on in your book that I read, I apologize, is it 39 or 29 in the title? The customer.
39. Somebody said, "Why 39?" I said, "That's all I could think of."
Thank you. So in your book, you mentioned, and I would like you to share this, because I think Lee's gonna nail it. And everybody who listens is going to believe this is oversimplified and okay, yeah, we hear this and these are cliches, but man, this needs to be a poster. What was it? It was your grandson that came to you early on and mentioned about how we need to treat people. Was it not in that book, Lee?
Let's see. Which story was it?
Remind me. It was early on.
I got three grandkids and they all give me advice.
Yeah, so I apologize for putting you on the spot like that. But there is, I tell you what, I'm going to look it up and post it tonight and make sure everybody sees it. Because I don't remember the exact quote and I don't want to undo it. But basically,
well, my granddaughter.
Granddaughter, thank you.
Margo was about 12 years old, and I was over to her house and I said, "Hey, Margo, I'm writing a book on customer service. I need some help. What do you think is the most important rule in customer service?" And little 12-year-old looked up at me and said, "Well, Pappy, the first rule is be nice to people." I said, "You know, bingo, be nice." And she knows that. And then my older grandson's studying biomedical engineering. He said, "Also, remember, your tongue is one of the strongest muscles in your body. Be careful how you use it. You might hurt somebody, you know?"
That's pretty good.
So again, and what I love about Lee's book is he constantly references that conversation about being nice and everything coming back. And think about you sitting in a room waiting for a CAT scan result. Think about you sitting across from your physical therapist doing something with you and not knowing. I believe you cannot over-communicate in healthcare, and we're not even close to fully communicating, let alone over-communicating. And most of what Lee says, and you know, that's what I believe we have to work harder on, from the first phone conversation until you walk into the office, until you meet your physical therapist, and every single time, whether it's about a bill or an exercise or your goals, we have to over communicate. And I think a lot of what Lee's sharing gets back to that. My take, Gene.
I tell you, especially in therapy, because you've got to keep reminding them and encouraging them, because it takes a long time sometimes. And a lot of people want to give up. So it's not working. You got to every day say, I think up front, you got to be telling them, this is going to take a while. It will work. And every week you got to tell them so that they don't get discouraged. I just went through some tough psychological counseling because I ended up with an anxiety problem, which I was the last person in the world I thought I'd get anxiety. And we had something happen in the family, and I ended up with anxiety. And I thought I was never going to get better. But I went to see a psychologist every Monday. I saw a psychiatrist. I started doing yoga. I got acupuncture. And I stayed on it. And I exercised every day. And most people don't beat it very quick. But I, all of a sudden, 2 weeks ago, I woke up, and it's going away, and I got better. And you've got to really... I had doctors who kept encouraging me, telling me, okay, it's going to be fine. It's going to take a little while. It's going to take a few more weeks. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And I was so down and out because of anxiety that I would like to have just said, screw it. This is not working. But it takes time. Anything that's really great takes time. And you got to encourage those patients to stick with it. It's like exercise. Most people don't stick with it, and they wonder why they don't get results. You got to stick with it.
And to stick with it, you have to be motivated, and motivation – good motivation takes good leadership skills. You have to know how to motivate people, how to communicate with them properly instead of just throwing out generic terms and words. You have to connect with them on an authentic level, that you understand them, they understand you, and there's no pretense. Your goal is to help them, whether it's in business, whether it's through an injury, it doesn't matter. You know, the fact that you were able to experience such a positive outcome only helped move you through that anxiety experience, which is a tough thing that is underdiagnosed and underspoken of in itself. We could have a whole podcast on that, but I'm glad to hear that you're coming around.
Oh yeah, and a lot of it was the encouragement I got from the doctors, because every time I walked out of the doctor, I felt better, because he said, no, it's going to be fine, Lee. Don't worry about this. This has never happened. I've always worked with people. You keep doing this. And then, you know, there's nothing like hope. Hope and encouragement are big medicines. And, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with coming back to Disney for a minute, with Disney, aside from hope, it's this baseline experience of magic. So there's no room for error for Disney. When people pay thousands or tens of thousands of dollars to go to Disney World or Disneyland or anywhere Disney properties, they are expecting a magical experience.
Absolutely.
About pressure on that. Healthcare, people are thrilled when their doctor spends more than 5 minutes in the room with them or makes eye contact. Yeah. we don't have that much. We have a huge room for error and improvement.
You know, that where my wife had a biopsy on her thyroid the other day, and the doctor, I went with her. She had the first one, he didn't get enough cells, and so we decided to do another one. I went with her. She wanted me to hold her hand. She covers up with a wire. They put three needles down there, and I went with her to meet him. The guy was so great. I walked out. I said, "Man, I really believe in this guy. He wasn't in a hurry. He sat there and explained everything." And the first time my wife had it, it hurt. And after she got to know him, and he was so encouraging and explained it to her, she said, "This didn't even hurt at all this time." And you know, your mindset has a lot to do with how much pain you have, and encouragement. And I just think more and more healthcare people have got to learn to give that. Just like, you know, as my wife said, if you love me, tell me. Mm-hmm. If the doctor tells people you're going to be good, and encouraging and tell them. And a lot of these cures come by out of the brain instead of just muscle.
Wow. Pretty profound there. But before we keep going with Lee, and trust me, we'll double back on those thoughts and touch on a little pain science for Lee. Let's take a little break and hear a word from our sponsor, WebPT. I sat down with Dr. Heidi Janenga, the co-founder and president of WebPT, to learn more about pay for performance. I asked Heidi, what's happening with payment reform and why should providers pay attention?
Well, Gene, with each passing day, we're moving closer to a completely value-based healthcare paradigm. One in which payers will financially incentivize providers based on their patients' outcomes, not just the volume of services provided to those patients. Soon, it won't be possible to provide subpar therapy and still turn a profit. In fact, it'll be difficult to make any money at all without providing valuable treatment and collecting objective data that backs up the effectiveness of that treatment. And once that data's in, we're all going to know who's performing at the top of his or her game and who isn't. So how do you ensure you and your practice make the cut? You start by tracking outcomes data, and you start right now. To learn more about payment reform and how outcomes factors into it, download our free guide at webpt.com/payforperformance. That's webpt.com/payforperformance, all one word.
Thanks, Heidi. Definitely check out webpt.com/payforperformance. And now, let's get back to Therapy Insiders with guest Lee Cockerell. Oh, Lee, you're opening up a can of worms here. So there's a whole movement of, well, it's not a movement, it's science. It's pain science. We're learning so much every year about how people process pain, and we used to think it's very tissue-based, but now we're starting to see it really is exactly as you said, which is very, very enlightening from someone that doesn't come from a medical background to have this awareness that the brain and our perception of pain is not just within our tissues. It's very complex. It's the environment. It's the people around us. It's our perception of danger. And as soon as your wife became more comfortable and accepted it and at ease, her pain levels decreased as well, which is pretty much on line with all the recent research coming out.
Well, you know what she told me? She said, you know what? It didn't hurt this time. First, she took a blanket when she's warm. When she goes to the dentist, she doesn't take Novocaine. She said she thinks about a blue sky and a nice place. And she said she kept a smile on her lips this time. And, you know, when you smile, it sends a message to your brain. And it was incredible to watch this because I've really gotten into this now, going through this anxiety problem I had of what the brain does to you and lies to you and doesn't tell you the truth, you know,
yeah.
And exaggerates everything. And I've really learned now to control my thoughts. Mm. I do meditation every morning now for 10, 15 minutes and really settle down and calm down and think. And I don't let my thoughts get away from me. And you can learn to, I believe it. I controlled my anxiety even. I'm able to now control it and take it down when it comes up. I can, in a few minutes, get it back down. And it's all mental. Pretty amazing.
I'm glad to hear that you're getting control over that. I've had some friends and family that have experienced that, and it's a snowball. It's very much like something bad happens, and you can't control that, whether realistic or not. There's no rationale to bring it back. So having a system, and systems are important, again, whether you're setting up a successful business or you're setting up yourself for success, you need to have mental and actual systems in place, and it sounds like you do.
Boy, I'm so type A that I put a system together, and that's all I did. My new job was to get better, and that's what I did every day, 7 days a week, and I did nothing else, and got out of it. It took me about 3 months to get over this thing, but it was brutal. I mean, I didn't care about anything. I just sat in the house for 2 months and looking out the window. I didn't care about anything.
Yeah,
I'm sure there was some depression there probably, but I got over the depression. I kicked that, and then everything else started to get better. So,
yeah, it's an ongoing process, and I think awareness to it that you when you say that I know that this is happening and accept it and say okay, this is how we get through it is a huge deal, and the reason that you're on the mend and feeling better, I think.
Yeah, so all those therapists out there just need to be good encouragers too, and just work that into their treatment because it'll pay off. Patients will appreciate it.
Hope dealers, you're everything you're saying, Lee, matches. We just had a patient panel at one of our conferences, and one of the terms used by one of the patients about her physical therapist was her physical therapist was a hope dealer. And like you were saying, telling you when you leave that office, nope, you're doing the right things. Keep going. It's going to get better. And that was one of my favorite phrases that came out of it was a hope dealer.
And a lot of medical people don't do that.
But it has to be realistic. It's not just hope for the sake of hope. It's hope with a sense of realism, because it's like the saying, if you tell somebody this isn't going to hurt right before you hurt them, you lose credibility and the person will never trust you. People want honesty, but you want to be positive and give them an outlook that is realistically optimistic.
Oh yeah. I mean, the doctor said this is going to hurt. So it was like, and it hurt, but it didn't hurt as bad as she thought it would. So.
That's fantastic. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk a little bit about business. So all three of us own businesses. We've had experiences, obviously different experiences. But you, when you left or retired from Disney, you started your own business. What is that business, and how has it been going so far?
Well, I like to write. So when I was going to retire, I talked to Disney about I wanted to write a book about leadership, and would they support it? Let me put Disney on the cover, and would they give me a contract to work, give speeches and seminars for them? And they did. They said yes. So I got that all set up before I left. And a lot of companies want to hear from the operators, the people who actually did it. They don't want to hear from facilitators. You know, people teaching a course, but they've never done it. And
it's like an analogy for life, Lee.
Yeah, it is. And so I started, and I wrote the book, and they had a lawyer work with me, and we got it all done. And I put up a website right away. I got a good web guy. He helped me design the site, and then I wrote the content. Got it up, and then I started developing seminars, speeches. I had a client who gave me a year's worth of work with his company, went around the whole country and did speeches on leadership management and customer service. So that got me started. And then it kind of took on a life of its own. And I added the blog to it. I added the podcast to it. I wrote a second book on the customer rules, customer service. First book was Creating Magic on Leadership. And then I wrote a third book on time management. And so once you get out there, you get, again, most of my speeches, most of my work, and most of my income comes from referrals. People sitting in the audience that hear, see the good work, they call and say, hey, somebody said we should use you. I mean, that's unbelievable in this business of consulting and speaking. And so I just, I try to make the clients really happy. I do whatever they want. I show up a day early if they want me to. And I stay and we have book signings and I stay and have dinner with them. And I just try to get a good reputation for not being that speaker that flies in, speaks, and flies out. And you're only on the ground for 1 hour. And so I give them a full dose. Sometimes I do a whole day program with them, or two programs, one in the morning, another one in the afternoon, and they get a lot for their money. Yeah. So I try to give value. I try to be cooperative. I try to take the stress off of them, because planning meetings is pretty rough. I don't want them disappointed. Because
you're building relationships, you're building genuine connections. I wonder where you learned that from.
Yeah, and while I'm very disciplined, so a lady calls me one day and said, we'd like you to speak at our conference. When could you tell us if you're available? I said, I can tell you right now. Here's my calendar. I looked at her. Yeah, I'm available. She said, well, how long would it take to get a contract? I said, I don't know, 10, 12 minutes? I can get it out. She said, boy, am I going to love working with you. She said, half the time I can't get a contract for 2 months from a speaker. I mean, why? Yeah. What's going on? Yeah. And I just pounded out. I just sent one a minute ago. It took me 5 minutes. I filled in the blank, sent it. The client got it. It's already settled when they got it, and they'll send it back tomorrow. And it's done.
Do your people that book your speaking engagements, and this is a bit of a personal question, do they ever balk at your price? Will they say, whoa, Lee, that's too much?
Yeah, all the time.
How do you deal with that?
I send them a little PDF, it says, price is what you pay, value is what you get. And then if they can't afford me, that's the way life goes. So I just had a guy today. He wants me. I told him my fee. He wrote me back and offered me like 1/10 of it. We just don't have the budget. I said, well, I'm sorry. You know.
Yeah. And
plus, then all the nonprofits say we're a nonprofit. I said, yeah, so is Harvard. They got $20 billion. I mean, no, I don't go for that. I said, by the way, I'm not a nonprofit. And so I'm not going to engage in that, because if you don't – I think if you want real leadership training, management training, customer service training, and if you think it's a cost to have me, you're going down the wrong path. You got to think it's a good investment. You're going to get your money back. Your people are going to do a better job after we do this. They're going to go back and save you money. It's going to go to the bottom line. You're going to get more customers. If you don't believe that, don't have me come in and talk to you. You're wasting your money.
Yeah. Jerry, do you see an analogy here to physical therapy?
Oh, dude, yeah, I'm dying. I'm dying here. Going, isn't that the same as going to physical therapy? If you don't want to get better, you don't have to pay me.
It hurts like hell, but if you go every week, it gets better. Here's a good one. Here's what I tell everybody. If you always take the easy approach in life, life gets harder. If you take the hard approach, life gets easier. You know, do the hard things. Life will be a lot better for you. If you do everything easy, life's going to get really hard for you.
Absolutely. And setting precedents. And we talk about pricing a lot in healthcare. And physical therapy, look, people still make money. It's not as much as other healthcare professionals, but there's this hesitation with charging what you're worth. Or if you set the perception of what you're worth and you say, well, you know, I don't think people will pay for this. Damn right they won't pay for it, because you've just negotiated yourself down within your head before even testing a market. So this happens all the time, and we have these conversations about what is our actual worth and how much are you willing to charge. So some places take insurance, some people don't take insurance, but this whole conversation of, yes, we want to help people and we want them to not break the bank to come see us, but there still has to be a part where you go, this is what I'm worth, and what I'm getting right now is below my value.
Yeah, and I think there's other ways you got to start to think about things, you know. I have a little specials, you know. If you'll book me under 30 days when I know I'm not going to get booked, I'll give you a 25% discount. If you call me a week out, I'll work with you. If it's in Orlando, I'll give you a better deal because I don't have to travel. I work out, I have strength training twice a week, and it's 40 bucks a session, and I've been doing it for 6 years. And my trainer, he's a great guy, but a lot of people balk at $40. And he has a rate, if you'll come at odd hours, when he doesn't have people don't want to come, like at 8 at night, or, you know, 6:30 in the morning, or, you know, he'll give you a better deal if you'll fill in his schedule for you. And so you got to find the ways. There's no problem making money in this country.
I like that. That should be the headline. And it's being okay with that. I think it starts with you. It starts with your mindset, like you said, and we harp on mindset all the time. You have to be in the right mindset to deliver the proper service and to grow your business. You have to have a growth mindset. You can't talk yourself down or be concerned. You can't have a scarcity mindset. You always have to be in growth mode, and that's customer experience. That's proper business mind, proper business foundations, and that understanding your audience and charging for the value you deliver.
Yeah, and you tell them you can get a cheap therapist, but you may not get better. And I always tell them, you get what you pay for, and they get a lot more out of me. I've done it for 40 years. I got it, and I worked for three great companies, and I can tell you how it's done, and I can convince the people in the room how it's done, because I've been on the floor. I've been a cook. I've been a dishwasher. I've been a housekeeper. I didn't just go to college, come out, and get on the carpet. I was on the concrete floor. And this is what people have got to start to think. You know, technology. Are your therapists using enough technology? I mean, they should all have, and I hope they do, so I can go on there after I see the therapist and watch a video how to do these exercises at home to get my shoulder better and how to do them properly. And can I contact you if I need to talk to you about something? I went to see a psychiatrist, and when I left, he said, here's my cell phone number, Lee. Here's my home number. You can call me 24 hours a day if you're having any problems. Who does that? Man, this guy, I've referred him to so many people you can't even imagine.
And I bet he can use that as a nice marketing pitch as well, to what if he's creating a scalable marketing campaign. It's supported by the smaller kind of grassroots campaign, which is the word of mouth referral.
And I call him, he calls me back right away. And I guess in psychiatry, you should. He's probably afraid I'll kill myself.
I should not be laughing at that, but I can't stop. Yeah. And that's there is the growth of technology in our field and in healthcare in general. It has to be, because I think it's happening everywhere else, and the integration of Silicon Valley and all the other tech that's happening is necessary for growth and innovation, because you can't be everywhere at once. There's got to be other ways to supplement that.
And making an appointment, make it easier. It's like it's a nightmare to make an appointment for any medical profession. God, I mean, you're on hold forever. And then I got others who you go in, you look for an opening, you make your own reservation. You know, you make your, you, there it is. You don't have to call somebody and talk to somebody. They open the hours. My doctor now, my internist, leaves open hours in the morning and the afternoon for emergency. So you can see your doctor the same day when you're really in trouble.
Yeah, Jerry, you don't know anything about that, do you?
Oy vey. This is, everybody's going to think, well, now everybody knows where I'm coming from, and everybody will think I planted Lee in this conversation. But yeah, I mean, yeah, Schedule Doc is available for people. I mean, there's so much technology out there to stay in contact. Vinitial, whatever it is. Yeah, Strive Labs to monitor your NPS surveys. I mean, there's no excuse. Like Lee, to your point, 110%. There's absolutely no excuse to modify and work your schedule around that way to accommodate.
I disagree,
I like to say,
Jerry.
Meet the customer where they want to be met.
I disagree.
I'm not going to argue with you.
I think there are plenty of excuses. That's the problem. There are way too many excuses.
Yeah.
It's so easy now. And people that use the excuse, I don't have the money or I don't have the time, are doomed. You are absolutely 100% doomed for business failure. It might not be this year, might not be next year, but you will fail.
Well, that's true. That's what they got to say. If I don't do this, I may not be in business in a year when everybody else is doing it. You know, I mean, you got to stay up. If you don't keep up.
Absolutely.
Not only keep up technically in what you do for a living, but keep up with technology. And, And I think Jerry said it, meet the customer where they want to be met, both emotionally and physically.
Perfect. Let's finish out. We had a Twitter question come in for you, Lee, from Elliot Davis at Machine Motion. He asked, how do you ensure that low-level staff buys into the big-picture mission?
Well, we hire the right people. We hire people. Yeah. We don't hire people and try to make them good. We hire good people. So we don't hire people and try to make them friendly. We hire friendly people. And so we're so clear with them, total clarity about our expectations that, as I said, 25% after we tell them what they got to do, they say, I don't want to work here. And we say, good, see you later. And so they buy in. And I think the other thing, we provide training, we provide opportunity. That may be the best thing we are, opportunity to learn and move up. So you can start in the kitchen and be a manager 5 years later. Or the current president of Disney World started cleaning tables 40 years ago in the first restaurant.
That's and awesome.
The That's only a reason story. They put him in the restaurant because he had a Greek last name. And he's the president now.
Now he's the president with a Greek last name.
Yeah, president with a Greek last name. And the head of marketing at Disney a few years ago started driving a boat on one of the lakes. She became the head of marketing for Disney Worldwide. And everybody knows that there's lots of opportunity. And you know, opportunity is one of the best benefits in the world. And maybe the opportunity is just learning. Somebody works for you and just teaching them. Because when you're developing your people and you're training them and teaching them, even if they don't stay with you, they're going to stay long enough. And when they know you're committed to them, you care about them, and you'll have better performance. And as they say, if your employees won't be committed to you unless they're sure you're committed to them. And
I like that. And then that bleeds over to the customers, and that feeds into this whole loop of customer experience. I hope our listeners at this point have realized that we've come in so many circles because it's all intertwined, that the customer experience, the culture of the company, the business mindset, these are all, they might seem like they're simple or easily processed terms, but they're not. They're global perspectives, but they're based on strong foundational principles.
Absolutely. And there's not anybody can do, you know, the difference between a good therapist and a great one is really big. The difference between a good receptionist and a great one is really big. It's hard to explain the difference. We know when we run into great people, and we know when we run into good people who are just there to do what they have to do, get the check. They're not bad. They're not good. They're just kind of average. And then when you go into an organization that has all great people, like Disney, I mean, you know it. You feel it everywhere you turn.
And there's a reason it's a multi-billion dollar company. It doesn't happen by accident.
Well, and the average guest comes every 3 years their whole life.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. Wow. Yeah. And what's the average? Do you know the average price of going to Disney something? Disneyland, Disney World?
Yeah, there's lots of ways to do it. Disney, if it's a slow period, like in September after school starts, Disney, or if we're in a recession, Disney puts out great packages. So it depends. We have economy hotels, and then we have you can spend $800 a night at the Grand Floridian, and you can spend $130 a night over at the All Star. So we have, packages with meal plans now, so people don't have to spend so much money for their food. And we give you free bus transportation from the airport, so you don't need a car, and you don't have to pay for that. And, you know, we just keep adding on these things that have high value for the guest, and they just can't go anywhere else. They get stuck. They say it's so good, we want to come back. And that's because every cast member treats them special, from their housekeeper to the waiter in the restaurant, to pays attention to their children every night, where the kids want to go back to that restaurant because the waiter was so nice to them. And I can tell you, when my wife is in the hospital, the difference between a good nurse and a great nurse, it's huge.
Yeah.
And there's some great nurses technically, but they were a real pain. They forgot why they became a nurse. Their bedside manner was terrible. They didn't get, you know, and then there were others who were just like unbelievable.
Yeah, I can completely attest to that. It's I don't want to say it's more painful, but it's brutal for me when I go to the hospital for whatever reason. Then several weeks ago, my dad fainted, and you know, my mom calls me freaking out because it's a scary thing for her. She's explaining to me, and I'm kind of piecing it together. But I met them at the EOR, and just the sheer robotic, cold nature of the people that were around there was I tweeted out at the hospital, and you know, they messaged me back, and I sent them this email, and it wasn't I didn't name names. It wasn't about that, because it's not always the people. It always comes down to the training, the management, the people that are in charge of the culture, I think. Yeah, you Absolutely. Can have a few bad people, but like you said, these are the people that need to be gone way before this becomes an issue. And I can't imagine I'm the only one. And people have bad days, okay? Everyone has a bad day, but to be a professional, those bad days need to be bad seconds, bad moments at worst.
And behind Mickey, the scenes, Mickey never has a bad day.
Mickey, that's what oh my God, that's scary. I'm sitting here waiting for the break going, Mickey never has a bad day, people. And neither does, my other favorite is Goofy, by the way. I'll just go on record.
Yeah.
Goofy.
My son really likes
Goofy
Donald
never
too.
Has a bad day.
My son
well,
really likes Donald.
They can have a bad day when they go on break, but they can't have a bad day when they're on stage. And that's it. And nurses got to know. They can go to the cafeteria and grumble and complain on their meal break, but they can't do it in front of a patient or other employees. Or it's their role in the show is to, part of it is to be emotionally strong.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
Encouraging.
Absolutely, because
I asked a nurse once, I said, what do you do? She said, I keep you alive, keep the doctor from killing you. So I said, yeah. She says, I'm here all day. The doctor will be here for 10 seconds.
Yes.
I bet she was your best friend, yeah. Oh, well, fantastic. Well, Lee, thank you so much for taking the time. Where can our listeners find more of your information, social media, website, anything if they want to find out more?
Yeah, I got a lot of good stuff. It's all free. It's on my website. It's www.leecockerell, CockerelL.com. I think the one thing they might enjoy is the podcast I do. It's How to Create Disney Magic. It's about leadership, management, and customer service. It's 15 minutes only. Every Tuesday they come out. They're great training material for any organization. My books are on there if you're interested in a book on leadership, management, or customer service. I have a blog on there. I have an app. Gives you daily advice how to be better.
Boom, I like
and,
it.
And it's all on there. And then I'm on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And we put all those podcasts. We post them to those sites so people can get them wherever they want to get them. And we're developing some classes on time management we're going to start offering and some other things. So it's a lot of fun. And everybody's out there trying to get better. But I just tell people today, you got to get better faster.
Great point. Absolutely. Hey, Gene, let me, knowing our profession, I'm going to talk about healthcare providers. I'm not going to say our profession. And knowing, like, the question that came through, I'm going to tell people that you got to get the customer rules by Lee Cockerell, the 39 essential rules for delivering sensational service. Because I tell you, any practice owner, any healthcare leader, it's really sets the stage for, we use the word mindset, but it'll get you in the mindset, like the hiring thing he said, and hiring towards the vision and hiring good. You'll understand it after you read that customer rules book. So yeah. I really want to recommend that. And by the way, I get no cut, people. I just totally value I totally value what I read out of there. And I want to thank you, Lee, for writing that, because it helped me a lot.
So I don't make anything on that one either, because the publisher's already paid me.
Yeah, so, there you go. All right, good. So
if you buy Creating Magic, I make a lot more money.
All right. Oh, boy.
Get one
of
each.
I'm still going to recommend the customer rules. Get one of each, people.
Yeah, get them all.
Get them all. Yep. Get them all. Absolutely. Yeah. And we'll put all of that into the show notes on our site, updocmedia.com, so you'll be able to find it. And we'll link to all of Lee things. You see, the man talks about technology and he lives by what he says. He's got it all.
And I'm old.
Oh, age is just the number, right?
Yeah, apparently.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for taking the time. I know I learned a ton. It was just great talking with you and just learning about the Disney process and experience. And I really appreciate you sharing some of your personal travels and struggles. I'm sure that's going to help a lot of people in a lot of ways as well.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You guys have a great day.
You too.
Bye. Thank you, Lee. Thank you, Gene. Bye.
Take care.
Wow. What an episode. Lee, aside from being an awesome storyteller, obviously, with everything that he's been through and his experience in Disney, I thought the coolest part were the connections he made about what makes a good clinician and not a good clinician, and the experience that he had within the clinic with his wife and everything is just, if that doesn't touch home, I don't know what does. And to create this experience, the perceptions of patients and people, you really have to think about everything, and you have to look at all the details and how you dress and what you say. And if you have a bad day, that can be 10 times worse for the person in front of you. So be cognizant, and really, I really hope you enjoyed this episode with Lee. As Lee said, definitely check out his stuff. I know a lot of people have already read his books on leadership, but they are definitely worth a listen and a read. If you like audiobooks, definitely take a listen to those. As always, thank you for listening, Therapy Insiders. Please check us out on iTunes. We really, really appreciate your reviews, so much so that we're starting a $5 giveaway every Friday. Just leave a review, take a snapshot, send it to gene@updocmedia.com, and we'll draw a winner every Friday, $5 to Amazon. Hope you partake. And if you need any digital marketing needs, check out updocmedia.com for any of that. As always, thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time.